Welcome, everyone, to the monthly membership call for the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School. Today is July 30th, 2018, and my name is Eric Roth, Managing Director of SAMS. It looks like it'll just be me today talking about what's upcoming for the month of August and the astrological and astronomical happenings coming into our awareness over the next 31 days. Just to give you some preview of what's going on with school, we have a number of different events taking place, and one coming up this week is our cross-quarter conversations with members. That's with Daniel and Kaylin on August 1st on the evening at 5 o'clock Pacific time, and it's going to be focused on the fire quadrant of the four elements. And we do this at every, we're doing this at every cross quarters. We started this year, beginning with the Earth at, around Beltane. That was the first one, and this one's at the midsummer point. And then later this year, we've got October 26th through 28th, an event, a three-day event in California, co-creating with the elements, facilitated by Kaylin Castell and a few others from the council, Executive Council of SAMS. So please go on shamanicastrology.com to find out more information about that at the University of Earth. And then we have two events coming up in person, like Co-Creating with the Elements is also in person. These two, other two events are going to take place in Southern Arizona, February 23rd to the 27th in Tucson, and that is going to be what we had been calling the Advanced Chart Analysis course, which we're tentatively calling the Evolving Shamanic Astrology Paradigm. So that the title of it is still evolving, but there's going to be a lot of new teachings at that course, so if you're interested and if you're trying to get certified and do not have this particular course, that is well worth taking. And then the March 1st through 3rd, also in Southern Arizona, just south of Tucson, will be the Cosmology and Night Sky course. And both of those courses will have Daniel Giammario and Kaylin Castell co-facilitating. I'll also be doing a portion of the Advanced Chart Analysis Evolving Shamanic Astrology Paradigm Intensive, February 23rd through 27th, 2019. I'm going to be talking about a few of the asteroids, and I'll be part of that discussion there. Now that we've shared some of these announcements, what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at what's going on in August. And normally, this is a co-creative effort with two people that gather the information and tune in here. So I'll do the best I can in getting everything that I can bring to the table here for the month of August. So I appreciate your patience, and welcome to the school here. Just to give you kind of a brief, for those who are new to SAMS, what we do every month is we explore what is taking place, every month. The planets following their movement through the constellations, their alignments, various events, significant events that take place in the sky, sun, moon, and planets and stars. And so we outline that, and we break it down for you as much as we can during the calls. So, of course, this is being recorded, and you can always listen to it again later if some of the information isn't quite making any sense. There's always a room for re-listening to it. So we've got August is chock full of a lot of alignments. And this is something I wrote about recently in my own newsletter. And, with that, I uncovered a lot of different things that are creating the atmosphere in which we are a part of here. The astrological environment, including this Saturn square Chiron alignment. It's not quite exact, but it is really within 2 degrees for quite a number of days. Mercury is going to be going stationing direct in August. Mars will also be stationing direct toward the end of August. We have Vesta also stationing direct this month. We have in the aftermath of the Mars-Sun opposition and then the total lunar eclipse on the other side of the planet from where I am, but most of the planet or a little more than half of the planet was able to witness the total lunar eclipse, which had its maximum, nearly its maximum amount of time that a person can have totality in that area. So we have some other things happening this month, and starting with the first, but we'll go in what's going on and what's visible. And most of the planets, if not all the planets right now, are visible in the evening sky. The visible planets anyway are basically visible, and it's really quite a show out there in the early evening sky. So please, for all that are tuning in here, to take a look out there nearly each and every night, with Mars at its most brightest right now. Venus is also brightening even more, nearing its maximum elongation from the Sun. Saturn and Jupiter are visible. And, of course, the Moon is always going through its regular pattern here. Mercury is just barely visible. You'd have to be under really ideal conditions to see it here in the Northern Hemisphere.
Hey, Eric, Taylan, yes. I'm sorry. I completely had a Mercury retrograde moment. Or several moments. But anyway, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Well, then welcome, Taylan.
Thanks. Sorry.
So we're already kind of into this a little bit, but I don't know if you, I'm sure you've already done some looking at the planets for the month of August.
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely. There's lots going on this month, yes. So
yes.
Why don't you go ahead and continue, and I maybe will jump in at some point, but I just wanted to let you know I'm here.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I was just going over what's visible in the night sky, all the visible planets that one can see are basically in the evening time right now. With Mars starting out the month at its maximum brightness, its brightest since it's been in 2003, and it will actually get a little bit brighter in 15 to 17 year patterning here, as Mars does in 2035. So it'll be, you won't get to see it this bright again until 2035. So it's really stunning outside. It's this yellowish orange red color because of the dust storm that's blowing right there globally on that planet. But it's actually going to dim a little bit by the end of August from a minus 2.8 to minus 2.1. Venus will brighten from minus 4.3 to minus 4.6. And the lower the number, the brighter the object. So if you're in the negative, that means it's even brighter. The planet Saturn will be at 0.2 magnitude, and it's moving to a 0.37 magnitude by August 31st. And Jupiter at, minus 2.11 to minus 1.93.
Hey, Eric, just want to say that I talked to someone today who saw Mars in the sky this morning and was absolutely stunned. She thought it was Venus. And she was like, what is that? Or Jupiter. And because Mars actually is brighter than Jupiter right now. So anyway, if you haven't had a chance to see it, it's been kind of clogged. We've had a lot of storms here where I am, so I haven't really had a chance to see it. But it's amazing to see. So definitely check it out.
Oh, yeah. It's been exceptionally bright. Last night I tried to see it, but there's just in recent days smoke from Southern Oregon and Northern California have blown up into the Portland area a little bit and it's created a haze. So we haven't, last night, I just saw it was kind of a little bit dim. But it's low to the horizon. Mars is fairly about 3 degrees below the out of bounds. So it's, and a part of the sky where it's in the southern part of the sky, so it's pretty far down there when you're up in the northern hemisphere here. But just keep that in mind when you are going outside and looking at the night sky. That Mars, you just want to make sure you have a clear view in the southern horizon to witness it. Of course, if you're down in the southern states of the U.S. or closer to the equator, you have a much better view of seeing Mars and its glory. Kaylin, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I'm just because the pre-conference call seems to have recycled itself, and it's back up. And anyway,
right.
It does that sometimes.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I'm in a personal Mars return. So I've been I saw it on the Mars Sun Opposition Day, and I've been trying to see it every day since that point. And this is the first time that my Mars return will be in Aquarius, because I was born with an Aquarius overtone, so this is really exciting. And at that time in 1971, something we'll talk about too is Mars had was conjunct the North Node three times in Aquarius in 71 when it was retrograde and going direct. And this time it's conjunct the South Node in Aquarius. And so it's kind of flipped on that script a bit. So I just find that an interesting patterning that's taking place from that year to this year, 47 years later.
Yes,
Kaylin, do you have the data on Mercury?
Its brightness and all of that? Is that what you're asking? I do have it.
Okay.
Did you haven't mentioned it yet? I'm happy to
I haven't,
talk about
no.
It. Okay. So, of course, Mercury is retrograde. I said that when I jumped on. And it's stationed retrograde right on my midheaven. So I've been feeling this very personally, this particular Mercury retrograde. Anyway, it will be with the Sun on August 8th. It is, of course, as Eric was saying, it's not really very bright right now. It's pretty low on the horizon, and it's not very easy to see. It will... go into the morning sky. I mean, yeah, it'll go into the morning sky on about the 17th of August. So it's getting closer and closer to the sun. And of course, we'll be with the sun on August 8th. And the thing about August 8th that's interesting is that it is 8-8. And there's a lot of, over the many, many years, there's been a lot about the 8-8 time gates. And because there's 8-8, there's 8-17, and there's 8-26, all adding up to 8-8, that we can always play with this month. And it's around the cross-quarter time when the first one happens, and, of course, Mercury being with the sun as we hit the exact cross-quarter on August 7. So this is emphasizing the Leo mysteries, having to do with self-love and self-confidence and self approval, self-acceptance, all of those things that is what Mercury is going deeper into as it's going retrograde. And it will station direct on August 18th at, or 19th, depending on your time zone, at 11:32 Leo. So, Mercury's will, as it stations direct, will be beginning a new Mercury cycle as well, that will last for about 4 months until it stations direct again, and that will be happening. It'll go retrograde in November, and then it'll go direct in December. So we have this cycle going on until December 6th of this year. So is there anything else about Mercury? Oh, it's reaching greatest elongation from the Sun on August 26th as well.
Yes.
And And it's about
3 degrees.
Yeah, and it's about zero magnitude as it's rising into the morning sky right after astronomical twilight, meaning there's a glow in the sky, and then right after that happens, Mercury should be visible come the end of, or by August 26th, but probably not before that.
Right, yes. Yeah, a lot of going on with what Mercury's doing, changing direction, and of course entering a whole new synodic cycle.
Yep. And so, have you talked about Jupiter yet?
I just mentioned that Jupiter is in the evening sky. Its brightness. It will pass Zubanel Janubi this month, and I got. On August 15th, it's going to be in conjunction with that star in the scales.
Yeah, it's been pretty close, but it's going to be even closer. About a half a degree north, so it's really close. And it'll be really close for a few days before and after August 16th, but just about a half a degree, yeah. So, awesome.
Yeah, that's special. So for all of those people that are out there looking at Jupiter and you're wondering what that little pinprick of light is near Jupiter, that's the star Zubanel Janubi, and that's been Jupiter's been there for quite a long time, actually, going back and forth over that star, and it'll be making one more pass coming up this month.
Yes, absolutely. So have you talked about everything else? The only other thing I'm wondering about, I guess, is the sun, the partial eclipse, if you've talked about that.
Oh, yeah, I haven't talked about it. If you want to, I've got the info written down, too, on that. But if you want to go ahead and talk about that?
Yeah, it's August 11th, so that'll close this month-long eclipse window. So usually eclipse windows last about 2 weeks because you'll start with a solar eclipse and end with a lunar eclipse, or you start with a lunar eclipse and end with a solar eclipse. However, this one started with a solar eclipse, had a total lunar eclipse at the center point we just had a couple days ago, and then, or 3 days ago, and then it's going to end with the solar eclipse on August 11th. Both the solar eclipses are partial and not visible, and none of it's been visible here in the U.S. for those of us who are here in the U.S., but this partial eclipse will be visible in Greenland, Northern Europe, most of Russia, and Northeast Asia. And, of course, it's happening at about, 1842 Leo or 19 Leo, if you want to round it up, and will be at the center point of that eclipse at 2:58 a.m. Pacific time or 5:58 a.m. Eastern time. So definitely worth tuning into and seeding any further intentions that you have around and this is also the day that, or around the time that Mercury is, on the 8th, so it's just a few days after Mercury has been with the Sun. So Mercury is not visible, but they're all kind of hanging out there together in Leo. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things to get this month started off beyond what we've just shared is there's a Mars, the second Mars-Uranus square. This is the second of three squares that Mars and Uranus are going to have together. And, of course, Uranus being in the sign of Taurus and Mars and the sign of Aquarius. This is happening at 2 degrees, 32 minutes, Aquarius and Taurus. And what's interesting about this is that it's fairly rare for Mars to have a triple or a three successive conjunctions, squares, or oppositions with an outer planet. And the last time it had a dynamic aspect like this was actually relatively recent, strangely enough, between December 2013 and 2014, when it was in opposition with Uranus. But prior to that, it wasn't until before 92 to 93, and it won't again. There'll be another upcoming square with Uranus and coming up in December 2026 through May 2027, but in completely different signs. Mars will be in Virgo and Uranus will be in Gemini. So this is another hallmark of the rare aspects that are happening right now, not just with Mars, but what's going on during this eclipse season, during Mercury retrograde. And so, Saturn and Chiron are in within 2 degrees of each other for essentially 2 months, between July 18th and September 12th. So there is quite a lot taking place right now, and we've been highlighting some major things. But this is one of the things I really wanted to point out, because it's a rare instance that when it only happens, of course, when Mars, at once every 2 years, it goes retrograde, and if there happens to be another planet, it's primarily an outer planet, that is nearby. In a square opposition or conjunction, then you'll get these three hits. So for those people that have planets, personal planets in any of the signs of self-interest or self-exploration, Aquarius, Taurus, Scorpio, or Leo, this is and with all the activity in Leo too, this is really a really critical time for you.
Yeah, the other thing that's really interesting to add to this is that Uranus is stationing retrograde on August 7th, and it's and it'll be retrograde until January 6th. So it's stationing retrograde, adding to, we already have five planets that are retrograde. We've got Mercury, we've got Mars, we've got Jupiter went direct, Saturn, we've got Neptune, we've got, who am I forgetting?
right now, that's retrograde too.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that too. Neptune, Pluto. Pluto's the other one I'm forgetting.
Yep.
So that's five. And then by August 7th, on the cross quarter day, the day the sun reaches 15 Leo, that exact sort of between point between the June solstice and the September equinox, we have Uranus stationing retrograde. And so that makes six planets retrograde. Of course, Venus being pretty much the only one, Venus and Jupiter being the only ones that aren't retrograde. And of course, the Sun and the Moon never go retrograde. But anyway, just that's another piece to add to all of this. And if we think about that, these retrograde points, of course, Mercury will station direct on the 18th or 19th, as already mentioned, and then Mars will station direct on the 27th. So, that by the end of the month, we'll only have, four retrogrades going on? Yeah. But it seems, I've definitely been feeling it, all of it. So it's pretty amazing.
And Saturn will station direct in early September, September 6th. So it's it's a really rare period for a lot of these planets at the same time to go retrograde.
Yeah, it's not something we experience all that often. I mean, there is that phenomenon of all planets in direct motion that does happen from time to time. And I guess occasionally from time to time you can have all planets retrograde, but it's kind of probably be more rare with Mars only going retrograde every 2 years and Venus every 19 months that they're going to all line up that way. So to have six out of all of them is pretty amazing.
It definitely is. So do you want to move down the month and see if we make sure we catch all the different things that are happening?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. We've got a lot going on.
We definitely do. So I mentioned the August 1st, Mars square Uranus, that Aquarius-Taurus axis. This is something actually Daniel and I talk about a lot during the Uranus and Taurus teleclass, and certainly involving the South Node, of course. If you wanted to know more details about that teleclass is all about about the Taurus Mystery School and how it relates. You know, it's like the pleasure of its bounty, and then we have the detached mind and the seeker of cosmic consciousness, you know, and getting together in a square that's, you know, those two signs, mystery schools, really are very, very different. I mean, they're both self-explorers, but they're very, very different when it comes to their approach to life and their qualities. And so in some ways, Daniel was talking about the masculine battle of you know, bringing technology into a place where we become one with it in humanity, and then we've got the other side of getting back into the physical domain, into really utilizing our full sensories and being part of the earth in more harmony. And so there's a way that that alchemization can happen between these two, where we're not just going one or the other, but we're incorporating both, because they both have important things to bring to the table, and you know, and being able to express our humanity in all its beauty, in all its brilliance, its ideas, and its pleasures.
Yes, it kind of reminds me of the shamanic astrology perspective that says it's not good or bad. It just, it all has an intent, and it all is valuable and valid, and so keeping that in mind, like it's not bad, it's not good, but how do we work with, you know, especially in a square, because the squares are often a crisis kind of energy, like crisis not meaning bad, meaning time to take action. Crisis, really, the original meaning of the word crisis was about taking action. So,
absolutely, making a decision.
Right?
Yeah.
Get decisive already. And then, and like on the third, the moon is going to catch up to Uranus. So that'll activate even more of that, because Mars will still be in a really close square at that particular time. So then the moon is just going to amplify all of that. And then we'll have the first quarter square, not exactly close to all of that, but, you know, the last quarter square, right before the new moon, happening there. But that kind of amplifies the energy as well, the Taurian energy, particularly because it's all in Taurus.
Yeah, that last quarter moon will be at 12:19 Taurus. So that's still kind of within the shamanic astrology definition of a conjunction with Uranus.
Yeah. So if we could see them, you could see Uranus not too far from that last quarter moon at that particular time. So
And then
something that is happening on the 6th, well, actually on the 5th, when the moon goes into Gemini, it will be passing the Pleiades. And then on the 6th, it'll be making its 48th occultation to Aldebaran. So we've been in the series of 49 occultations, and the last one will be September 2nd. So we're very near the end of it. And one of the ways when I tune into this and what I get is that each occultation is an acceleration of the intent and the energy. And so, and each one builds on the other. So here we are at all, you know, 47, almost 48, coming up pretty quick. And, it's the eye of the bull. It has to do with perception, but it's also near the galactic edge, but not that far from the galactic cross, was known as the Silver Gate. So this star is one of the four royal stars of the ancients, having the series of occultations, is just a whole other piece that lets us know that our perception and how we are perceiving and experiencing reality is perhaps undergoing a massive acceleration of change. that way of seeing how we're seeing our reality. And I have to say, it feels like that when we look at what's going on the world stage. Some of the insanity, it seems insane. Like, I don't get it, I don't understand, and I just have to trust that somehow there's a divine plan that is beyond my ability to comprehend at this point. Yeah. Anyway, So yeah. I don't know if you had anything else about that, but.
No, I mean, we know the next day, August 7th, Uranus stations direct.
Retrograde.
What was that?
Uranus stations retrograde, you meant. I know
I'm
you
sorry,
meant
stations
that.
Retrograde. I apologize. Yes.
Yeah.
No, it's eventually going to back into Aries for a few months and then come back out. But one, it's like getting one last taste of Aries before it goes fully into Taurus next year.
Also, just to say that on August 6th, right before that, is Venus moving into Libra. And this is significant because the next cycle of Venus will be the Libra metagoddess. It'll go into Scorpio for a little while, but come back into Libra. But it's got a long journey through Libra. And we'll be rising around 29 degrees Libra on November 1st before the sun. So I've been starting to think about this a little bit. And the Libra metagoddess, what is she? She hasn't been on the world stage in a long, long time. So, and she's following right on the heels of the Aries metagoddess. Aries, that is, if you think of the Aries-Libra axis, Aries is about more about the relationship to self, and Libra is more about the relationship to others. And yet you have to have a healthy relationship to self to have a healthy relationship with others. So, and this is the last time we've got the Aries metagoddess on the world stage for 155 years or so. And it's the only time that it could possibly be going from Aries to Libra. It's been going from Aries to Scorpio, and so it's just now shifting. So to have that balance, you know, that axis activated from one cycle to the next seems very significant to me. And, of course, Eric, you and I will both be in our Venus returns when that happens.
Yeah, indeed we will. I'm really curious as to how this this new overtone is going to, you know, sit in our lives and, you know, as we participate in it. It's I'm really intrigued by you know, what's around the corner with that particular, suddenly Venus is exploring what conscious equal partnership is, all the way coming back from the Amazon warrior, cosmic defender energy.
Yes, and I think Libra does want to protect the sanctity of relationships, but from a place of collaboration, cooperation, being, you know, of course, conscious about that, conscious collaboration and cooperation, and co-creation. So how do we co-create together with each other? I think these are some of the things that have been coming up for me around when I tune into this energy, what might be at play. So it'll be interesting to see how that comes about.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We just covered the 6th and 7th, and now we go into the 9th, actually the 8th, is when Mercury has this conjunction, interior conjunction with the Sun. That means it's passing between the Earth and the Sun, and as you mentioned before, Kaylin, it's at 1627 Leo, and that's when it does that. For everybody, that's it's closing in on its new synodic cycle beginning a little bit later in the month of August.
Yes.
So, yes.
And August 9th, we've got Venus square Saturn because it just went into Libra.
Yes. Venus square Saturn.
How do we do conscious equal partnership? Saturn, the wise elder, the grandmother, the wise one who knows, maybe Venus is getting some instruction around how to do that.
And in opposition to Chiron, same time.
Yes, right.
Just as
those folks.
Yeah, we've done you and Daniel did a Saturn Chiron teleclass, so I think it was last year. And so there's a lot of rich material in that class that is going to stand the test of time, I'm sure, between those two planets.
Yes, Yeah, so if you haven't had a chance to hear that, I highly recommend that you connect in with that class. So, yeah.
Yeah, the feminine is definitely moving into a powerful initiation just before she goes through the sixth gate on the 14th. So at 7:47. Libra, and that's still kind of in the zone of its aspect to both Saturn and Chiron, within about 5 degrees of both opposition and a square to that. So when, especially for people who are in Venus returns or are participating in the really in the Venus initiation, this is, you know, include those that astrological transmission from those from Chiron and Saturn as the feminine evolves and moves forward in this next incarnation.
Right, and at the sixth gate in the evening sky, she's reclaiming her sixth chakra, brow chakra, connection to the pineal gland and the pituitary, and having to do with vision and how do we envision and how do we have that more mystical connection to the divine, and how do we reclaim that? So that's what this is all about. That's the opportunity, and it's also in the place of partnership and relationship where this is happening. Yeah. So having new vision around the partnership relationship piece, perhaps.
Yeah, and working with. Yeah, I'm working with our wounds around that, and being able to fully express that those qualities within our being, certainly around the feminine, through the limits and boundaries of Saturn as well. But they can be your allies. They're not there to necessarily suppress your third eye chakra. They're there to just bring conscious awareness to literally to that part of us. And we all have a masculine and feminine. It's not just for women or for those people that are going through the Venus return, although for those people it is at a much more personal, initiation. But everybody is experiencing this as a collective.
Yes, yeah, and wow. So encouraging people to work with that and also to, there's a lot of information out there now about how many of us have calcified pineal glands, and there's a lot of practices and kinds of foods and things you can do to help decalcify the pineal gland, because that's the one that really connects us to the vision, to the possibility. It's the, you know, that it literally has rods and cones in the pineal gland, so it's literally like an eye that can see, but if it's calcified, not so much. So that's one of the things you can do to work with this piece, is to just tune into the pineal gland and see if there's anything you can do. One of the top things they say is to get rid of fluoride in your toothpaste and your drinking water, because fluoride very much calcifies the pineal gland. So that's just one.
Oh, yeah, I try to stay away from fluoride as much as I can.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I know they try to put that stuff in many urban environments in the drinking water, thinking that will help protect people's teeth, and that it's not really made to be ingested into the body.
It's really poisonous. And one of the things that I've read about this is that when they were, some chemical company was, they had all this fluoride left over from some process they did, and they were trying to figure out what to do with it. So they decided to put it in drinking water and tell people that it would be make their drinking water safer. But that was, it's basically poisoning people. That's what it's doing. So since they did that, it's caused all kinds of problems for lots of people. You can do your own research on that, but it does feel like there's some truth to that. And, so you definitely want to have a good water filter, or, I don't know the bottled waters any better. I really don't know, but definitely if you have a good water filter, that could be help you not to have to deal with the fluoride in the water. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we did talk about the partial solar eclipse on the 11th. So that's, you know, it's not visible here in North America, but you know, as Caitlin, as you mentioned, in the northern part of the world, Greenland, Iceland, northern Europe, parts of northeastern Asia, including Siberia, Mongolia, northeast China, and there's a few other countries in there. I think Kazakhstan as being one of them will have a view of that. But please check, look on, even or probably you're at sky.org, Wikipedia, Sky and Telescope. I think all of these places will have, and NASA will also have maps in case you find yourself in one of these locations. I know Scotland and England and Iceland will also, and the Norwegian, Scandinavian countries will also have visibility there too.
Right, and it's a great time to, because we're closing the eclipse window, again, to plant seeds of intention and be noticing what you're holding in consciousness and awareness. I mean, really through the whole eclipse window, but especially at the close of the eclipse window, good time to do that.
Yeah. Absolutely, and it's we also on the 13th. There's a very variable condition, favorable conditions for the Perseid meteor shower, because it happens just after a new moon. And so when that happens, usually you get really good clear skies, or clear skies, when it comes to the light of the moon interfering. It doesn't mean that there won't be any clouds or any water. It'll just mean that if the clouds are gone, it's a great time to bear witness to the meteor shower.
Right. And this they're thinking it's going to be a pretty good one, and that they I remember in 1992, I actually remember taking my kids out to see this. They were predicting like hundreds of meteors per hour, and there were a lot, but I don't know that there were hundreds in 1992. But they have outbursts every now and then, and even without that, you can have as many as 50 going across the sky in an hour. So that's still worth going out and checking it out. So
yeah, absolutely. So we move through to August 15th, and we have the moon going over or near Spica by then. But there is a, where did I have that written down? Did we talk about the gates? Yeah, we talked about the gate already, didn't we?
Yeah, and that's happening on the 14th.
The 14th,
yeah.
Okay. So I had something down for the 15th, and that's right. Jupiter over Zivanovic-Janubi. That's its conjunction. Yeah. So the bright Jupiter at roughly minus 2.1, maybe just below 2.1 by then. It's very visible, easy to spot, and then you see a slightly dim star that's near Jupiter, just below it, and very close, as Caitlin, as you pointed out, at its maximum about a half degree. So less than a finger width held an extension of distance between those two celestial objects.
Yeah, and the moon catches up to Jupiter and Zivanovic-Janubi the next day, so there's going to be a trifecta happening there, triune council sometimes I've called it, with the moon and Jupiter and Zubin-El-Janubi. And Zubin-El-Janubi being the star that is currently marking the cross quarter point in the November cross quarter, sometimes called the Solwyn crust quarter. So Jupiter can only be here every 12 years, and to have the Moon and Jupiter and Juvenile Janubi all hanging out together is definitely, hopefully, I've got my fingers crossed for clear skies.
That's right, because it sits right there at that 15 degree mark.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. So Mars on the 16th is at its greatest declination. So it's as it went retrograde last month, in June, and went in opposition in July. And then it's pretty far, as I was saying earlier in this call, it's pretty far below the ecliptic, which is why you'd want to have a really clear southern horizon to see it. I know where I live, I have to literally go around this hill that I live on and around these big evergreens to find Mars. Even though it's super bright, I have to really look down closer to the horizon line. Although when it rises up and it's, you know, as it's getting closer to its zenith point, it's much more visible at that time. But then we get to the 18th. We got our last quarter moon. We have Mercury stationing direct. So our those people out there that aren't fans of Mercury retrograde are going to be celebrating Mercury going direct. I personally am a fan of Mercury retrograde, only because it's I look at it as a normal natural process of Mercury, and it does things, makes things interesting for for life in general. I have sympathy for Mercury getting the blame for a lot of things when it's not necessarily always Mercury's fault.
but it's handy to blame. Right.
So what?
I said, but it's so handy to blame.
It is. It's pretty convenient. Yeah, that's right.
But ultimately, we do need to take 100% responsibility for our own reality. So, you know, even though I still like to blame it sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to mention Mars is going into Mars went into Capricorn on August 12th, which it stays in Capricorn for just.
Retrograding back into Capricorn.
Yeah, it retrogrades back into Capricorn on August 12th, and it'll be there for just about a month. In September, after going direct later this month, it goes back into Aquarius, where it stays for a few more months until November, when it finally enters the sign of Pisces. So it's a long process for Mars in Aquarius.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing that's, because you were talking about its maximum declination, Mars is and has been all of last month and this month and in the next month outbound, meaning it's outside the furthest southern place that the sun can rise, and that adds to its, I mean, it's already been in Aquarius. It's wild cardness. it's kind of wild card factor that can happen when a planet is outside the boundaries of the sun. It's outside of ordinary reality, and so we've had all these things with eclipse window and the Uranus pieces and all the different things that have been going on with Mars, and then on top of that, it's been outside the boundaries of ordinary reality. How cool is that?
It definitely is. In fact, one of the things that's happening with Mars, it will go direct later in August, but it's approaching, I never really looked up what these stars really represented, but there's these small group of stars that are technically part of the Archer constellation, and it's going to butt up right up against these stars on August 27th, when it stations direct, but they're called Cerebellum, and there's four of them, And it's a Latin, it comes, it's derived from a Latin term meaning to bore or to drill into. And these groups, so they're really not separated, or not really, they're part of the Archer constellation, but then again, it's almost like they're in a sub constellation in itself. And if you think about the retrograde of Mars and how far below the ecliptic it is, and you know, in Aquarius, it's drilling down into the waters. It's drilling down into the south, into maybe into the depths of consciousness itself. Drilling down in with its relationship with the south node, what is it going to uncover? What depths of that soul is it going to, what knowledge and richness is it going to bring to the surface around the masculine, around what the masculine's been over these last few thousand years. So I just find that really fascinating, how what those stars mean and how they apply to what's going on in the sky.
Well said. So where are we?
I just skipped a bit because I was looking at, we were talking about Mars. So we got first quarter moon. Venus at greatest elongation on the 17th. That's at about 46 degrees, 45.9 degrees from the sun. And that's almost as far as Venus can get. I think Venus can get a maximum of 48 degrees. And so it's going to be, it's been hovering around that place, but that just seems to be that's the mathematical point of its farthest from the sun.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about Venus and the evening sky, she's always near the end of the gates, like she's been rising up, and she gets to maximum elongation towards the end of her evening star appearance. So, after she's passed through the sixth gate. And sometimes the seventh, but in the morning sky, it's after she passes the first or second gate, she gets to maximum elongation, and then she's descending. So it's interesting how much the Venus cycle connects to the story of Inanna's descent. Morning sky, she's descending, and evening sky, she's ascending. So I just find that to be worth noting.
Right, because she gets to her maximum in the morning sky much, much earlier, is what you're saying, right?
Yeah. And then after maximum elongation, Venus starts dropping back towards the horizon, even though Venus is kind of low on the horizon based on declination and this particular cycle. But, you know, if you were thinking of her getting as far away from the sun, she's been ascending and rising and reaching away from the sun in her, you know, the last few months here. So.
Right. Yep. She's nearing the end of her journey in this ascent of her from the underworld. So we have first quarter moon on August 18th at 25:20 Scorpio, and on that same day Mercury stations direct at 11:31 Leo. And from there, I think there isn't really much until we get into...
it might be worth people checking out the moon with Saturn on the 21st. And then the sun does move into Virgo on the 22nd. It does that pretty much every year, either the 22nd or 23rd. So that's the last, basically the last 30 days before the fall equinox, when that happens, representing that seasonal time.
Yep. And then we get to the full moon on the 26th of August, and that's at our Pisces full moon at that time. So the sun will be in Virgo and the moon will be in Pisces. That's 312 Pisces is what I've got here.
Excellent. And also Venus happens to be square Pluto that day, interestingly.
Venus oh,
and
yes.
Libra square in Capricorn. So getting another initiation from the underworld domain, interestingly, in her ascent at the sixth chakra gate. It's interesting to contemplate. You know, how is she being empowered? How is she getting empowered with a new vision, perhaps? And anything in the way of that may come up to get to be brought into awareness so that it can be cleared.
Absolutely. And then we have, of course, we mentioned Mars stationing direct on August 27th at 2836 Capricorn. Stayed there until September 10th when it goes back into Aquarius. And on the I found this interesting. I'm sure you already saw that. It's Venus will be with Spica really between August. I mean, I usually have about a 4-day window in there. August 30th through September 2nd will be below that star. And that's a stand-in for the feminine, or stand-in, like a stellar stand-in for Venus herself, the feminine principle, and really powerful representative of that, of the feminine, and in the constellation of the priestess. So Venus is making her way across the constellations, and she's, I think, is it in September when she meets, oh wait, maybe she doesn't get to meet Jupiter because she gets retrograde. I didn't look to see if she actually catches up with Jupiter in September or not. But
I don't know. I hadn't looked that far ahead myself. But you know, but some point she will catch up to Jupiter. Just not sure when.
Right. It could be delayed because of the changeover, the metamorphosis into her next incarnation.
Yeah, I'm looking right now, and it looks like Venus is going to go retrograde at 11. Scorpio, well, at 10:50, rounding up, and at that time Jupiter will be at 23 Scorpio. So yeah. I don't think they're going to get together for a little while yet.
Yeah, I
think. And it might be curious when they actually catch up. I don't know.
Yeah, so I think we've covered it. Was there anything that we missed there, Kaylin?
I think we pretty much have covered it, so it may be time to open up open it up for questions, comments, insights, ahas.
I can. I'd be happy to move it to the Q&A session here.
Sure. Go ahead. So press star 6 to get into the queue. Yeah.
And took the words out of my mouth. Thank you.
Right. And then I think it might even ask you to press 1 after that, sometimes to raise your hand or something. I don't know. Anyway, it'll give you instructions. So, yeah, we've already got somebody, it looks like. Do you want to run the Q&A, Eric, or should I?
I'm happy to do that. So looks like we got Mary Kern here.
If you click on next, I think Annalise will come up sooner.
Oh, okay. Oh, Annalise, yes, you are with Kaylin and myself here.
Hey, am I unmuted?
Yes.
Yes,
okay. You are.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to make a product suggestion in response to your discussion earlier about the fluoride in drinking water. So I started... I made the investment to get a filter like a year ago to something that filters out like everything, the fluoride, chlorine. There's like trace pharmaceuticals in drinking water, just like all sorts of stuff that we don't want. So this product, I've been really happy with it. It's like an over-the-counter filter called AquaTru. It's spelled AquaTru. So a couple $100s, but it's like an investment, you know, for long term, and it just filters everything out. So I just wanted to kind of suggest that for anyone who's listening and is like a fellow health nut, because basically most bottled water still has fluoride when there's chlorine, kills gut bacteria and stuff like that. So just wanted to put that out there if anyone is interested in kind of making that investment to, you know, decalcify your pineal gland, and it's like a health investment. So
that is excellent. Thank you, Annalise. And you can also get water bottles that have, like, I have a refillable water bottle that has a filter on it so that when I'm traveling, I can fill up anywhere, and it super cleans out all the crap out of the water.
Right.
So yeah, that's something also worth, if you travel a lot, doing as well, is getting, I think Clearly Filtered is the brand name that I've used, and they're really brag a lot about their how high quality it is, and I really like the filter, and the water tastes great. So that's another option for people.
Okay, awesome.
Say again. Clearly Filtered. I think if you go, if you Google it, you'll find it.
Awesome. Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you. Anything else?
No, sorry, it wasn't astrology related. Just, you know.
Okay, no, that's completely fine. I think that's great for people to know.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yep.
Yeah.
All right, Mary Kern. Hello.
Yeah, August looks very exciting. Thank you for all the heads up on everything. At the very beginning, when you talked about Mars, I was taking copious notes. And the one thing I want to ask is what time, you were talking about Mars being late at night, early in the morning, what's a good time to really go out and look to see Mars if it's clear?
Well, it is rising around sunset, but you won't see it that well at that point. So probably if you, well, Eric, you've been out to see it. I'm imagining 8, 9, well, depending on where you are, because where we are, it's really dark by then. And Mars will come up. So in California, I mean, in Portland, what's your experience?
Yeah, I have to. I mean, you know, we have really like at summer solstice, we get you know, about 16 plus hours of daylight. But now the sun's setting around 8:40 p.m. So it's you can see Mars in probably, I would imagine, the twilight now. And under ideal conditions, and where you live, Mary, I think the sun's setting earlier than that in Northern California. So I imagine if you go out there, even 8:30 p.m., you'd be able to go and see it, depending on how clear of a eastern horizon you can see. But the later you get into August, you know, the more the higher Mars will be at sunset. So you'll be, it's, you know, it's kind of right now in the middle between morning and evening. That means you can see it just about all night long. And if you wake up before sunrise, then you can definitely see it, pretty brightly, if you get up early enough before the twilight area.
Right. I was up, we were out looking at Jupiter with the moon, but Mars was still clear down at the horizon, and by the time it got late enough at night, the darn smoke and fog was in because of the fires. That's why I was kind of asking, because you were saying that it was low on the horizon.
Yeah, it's pretty low to start with. I know at the opposition point, I was out there waiting, and I had to drive to the shopping center for you know, away from a lot of the trees, in order for me to see it. But it was pretty far below the moon once it did rise above the treetops. And so that was pretty amazing. And it was just exceptionally bright, super bright. And, you know, when I was in 2003, I saw Mars, but it didn't feel like, I don't know, I wasn't paying attention to it at that time as much. That was before I got into shamanic astrology. So I wasn't really tuned into it. On a conscious level, at that time, but I did see it, and it was pretty bright then. But this is like, it's pretty stark, and I don't know if it has to do with the dust storm or what. I think the dust storm might be causing it to be a little more luminous at this time. But yeah, just I think as the week goes on and the next couple of weeks, I think you'll be able to see it more and more. It'll be higher and higher in the skies.
That's what I'm looking for. The other thing that I'm sensing into, and it sounded like it was tied into some of what you talked about, maybe some of even llamas, and that's going to be talked about beautifully on Thursday night at the Founders Talk, is I kind of feel like what's going on with all these fires and floods is, at least it's happening here, and it's really got me in a sense of awe. But they have found funding to train for free the yoga community to teach trauma release types of exercises to the population. And I'm already seeing some amazing things coming out of that. It's just clearing, because it's not just from the fire. It's just from all types of personal trauma that people have had. There are these very simple exercises that are profoundly effective in clearing that and kind of getting people's sympathetic nervous systems back into alignment and integrated back with the parasympathetic. It's kind of a big shift opportunity, and it's spreading from Sonoma County. They're wanting it now in Mendocino County and Lake County, and I could see it really becoming a movement that could make a big, big shift for big populations, and it's just so amazingly easy.
Well, let's just hold that intention that if that does happen, because that sounds awesome.
Yeah, oh, I do. You know me, I'm Pollyanna when it comes to that kind of stuff. But just in going through a 3-hour training, I was almost disoriented from the effect of it. It was really cool. Anyway,
I love that.
Awesome.
Love it.
Yeah, cool.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's just always the other side of the mountain. And right now we're on one side of the mountain wondering what's going on. But I think we're getting to a point where we're starting to glimpse what's going to come from all of this. And I'm personally excited. Anyway.
Yeah.
Thank
Beautiful.
You.
Beautiful. Thank you, Mary.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
And Terry. All right, we have one more caller. Dan, you're on.
Great. Hi, guys. Dan here. Speaking to Mars, I just took a road trip out to the circuit part by eastern Utah and Colorado, Nevada, Great Basin, and I was we sat for the Milky Way, so it was new moon, and all of a sudden, maybe 45 minutes after the sun set and it started to get dark, Mars appeared, and it was, you know, just like Eric explained, with that massive dust storm and red, and it was huge. And I just wanted to share that experience because I went out for the Milky Way, but Mars really, really came through. And the rest of the trip, we just kept waiting for Mars to come out. But it was very low and sometimes difficult to see if there was the monsoons happening. But it's been a great show. Haven't been able to really see Mars too much here back in the Bay Area.
I'm really glad you shared that, Dan. And one of the things you're reminding me of is I saw this back in 2003. There were lots of emails going around saying Mars is brighter than the moon, bigger than the moon, or something like that, brighter and bigger than the moon. And I actually saw that on Facebook the other day. I'm like, oh, it's still around. So Mars is brighter and more amazing than Jupiter right now, but I don't think it can ever be brighter or bigger than the moon.
No,
so,
nowhere near it. nowhere near it, Jupiter still shines brightly out there. It was great to see Saturn, got to see the Archer and the Scorpion. I love this time of year getting
yeah.
into it. I did have a question because all the eclipse happened on my 2-degree Venus in Leo, so the north nodes are all activating all my Leo, and all the planets in retrograde. I just wanted to hear you, because this is such a rare period, would you just say a little bit more about what this might mean from a shamanic astrology point of view? You know, I also had a thought, is this retrograde maybe helping us deal with all this massive change and acceleration?
Because, that's a great thought.
Right? And follow up that, because of the whole eclipse thing, it just seemed the eclipse did bring things up for me to deal with and brought it into awareness. And I had the thought that it's time to step up into a new way of creation instead of the dark temptations of reaction.
Right. Well, just the thing about the north node, or either the south node, they travel together, is it's only every 18 and a half years that it can come through a specific part of your chart or be in a part of the sky. So it is significant, and it sounds very personal to you what's been going on. And I always see the north node on a planet as activating something that is connected to our destiny, you know, where we're going, what's our future intention, where, you know, that kind of thing. And that when the south node isn't there, but, you know, is kind of opposite, that we can see that as connecting with the things of the past that help us get to our future destiny, and also connecting with the things of the past that hold us back from our future destiny, and releasing, letting go, clearing, getting with Mary and learning how to do trauma release, yoga stuff. I think that's awesome. But you know, what is it that what would it take for us to release those things that hold us back from even being willing to go into that territory? So that's what I would perceive that as. And then when, you know, it's happening with that eclipse, and what we're, even though we didn't see the eclipse, what's happening, literally happening, is the moon, is the earth. What we're seeing on a total lunar eclipse is the shadow of the earth on the moon. We're looking at our own shadow. So what you're saying there about bringing up those kinds of things, it's like, even if you can't see it, we're still having that opportunity to, through whatever experiences we're having, seeing our own shadow. I just think it's remarkable. So I think you're bringing up a really good point. And I love that perspective of seeing a total lunar eclipse and realizing it's an opportunity to see our own shadow. And maybe perhaps why some ancient cultures were afraid of it. Because they weren't like wanting to look at their shadow. They were like, no, I don't want to see that. So I'm going to go hide and not look. Right. Yeah. So. Was that everything you asked about?
Oh, yeah, this was a great call tonight. Definitely lays a context for August.
Awesome. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Yeah, you know, one of the final things, with Mars and Aquarius in the south node, it could even be like, coming out of your body, too, and experiencing it through your conscious self and seeing it from a higher perspective about what our shadow is about and what we're, you know, what we're not letting go of, and from our origin, from where we came from, that is holding us back from, you know, moving into our own our soul's evolving place and you know, our destiny, or our, you know, the intent of where we're headed. And I'm really having experiences around consciousness with my Mars return and this whole thing with the south node. It's still a lot of processing that's happening, just kind of raw right now.
Yeah.
So, a great question, Dan. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, very, very good. Thank you. So it looks like we might be complete.
Yes. I think we're doing great, and I'll go ahead and unmute everybody, and we can say goodnight.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thanks, Kaylin. Thanks, Eric.
Bye.
Thank you.